24th.
We don't want to do it in the first place.
President Tabor, Senator Donnelly, Senator Lehman, Senator Ward, Senator Lincoln, excuse me, Senator Wilken, where the heck?
One's a little taller than the other one, Mr. Chair.
Wilken, Lincoln, and Nod.
I can tell the difference, she has black hair and he has, oh, never.
Ooh.
Senator Hoffman, Senator Osterman, Senator Green, and myself, Senator Kelly. Senator Cowdery, you have a bill before us, and it is SB 83, and I want to make sure we have for testimony on this, it's 193. Excuse me, apparently we're taking, oh. Senator Cowdery?
Yes.
Let me get you to pause just for a moment. I've just been told that we're a little bit out of order here from.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Okay.
It's been given orders.
We're going to have some folks to testify on Senate Bill 152, Senate Bill, that's probably 152 there, Senate Bill 83.
What did you say, we're not going to be here?
Okay, so 152 and 83. If I can call just a brief of these here, I need to talk to Co-Chair. Back in order. Also, we're not going to be hearing Senate Bill 193 today, just for everyone's information.
I like that bill, Mr. Chairman.
We're all going to leave.
We are going to need a motion on Senate Bill 174, which needed a technical amendment to it that we did not get to. I thought we took care of it, we searched the record. The motion was not made nor recognized, so Georgiana, if you'd make the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to ask unanimous consent that the committee rescind its actions in passing Senate Bill 174 from committee for purposes of a specific amendment, that amendment being number one.
Objections?
Mr. Chairman, I move.
Hearing none, we have rescinded our action, that brings Senate Bill 174 before us. Just for clarification, it is version C. Version C is before us. Senator Wilken?
Chairman, I move amendment number one, I think that's being distributed right now.
Are there objections to amendment number one?
I'll object for.
Thanks, Senator Hoffman. Senator Wilken, could you speak to amendment number one for Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment has to do with clarifying the intent of the change in the local requirement for organized Alaska. As you'll remember, currently, we pass on 0.4% of the increase in assessed value in organized Alaska to the local taxpayer. The effect of the amendment last week was to pass on half of that so that the funding load is carried half by the taxpayer, half by the general fund. If you look on page 2, line 30, you insert the word after the only 50% of the, and we insert the word annual increase. That clarifies that it's the prior year compared to the year immediately past, and it's an annual calculation. That is the first part of the amendment. The second part, if you'll turn to page 3, line number 4, at the end, the base year is 2000. That has changed, the base year is 1999. So that establishes the local assessed value calculation for organized Alaska has a two-year look-back. So this establishes that the look-back is between 1999 and 2000 to establish the difference. And that difference then for the '02 funding year is split 50-50 by the general fund and by the local taxpayer.
Senator Wilken, just for the record and for members of the committee's information, this is amendment number 6. I think I stated it was amendment number 1. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we took up this amendment, without the comparison to the year, well, comparing it to 2000, we had a printout that the senator passed out. Do we have one that compares, gives us a comparison for the 1999 date?
Senator Wilken?
Chairman, I do not have that. That would be part of the fiscal note that would come from the department. But if you could check to second. Mr. Chairman, Senator, those do use the 1999 figures.
One does?
Is the objection maintained? There is no objection, amendment number 6 has passed. That brings version C before us. Senator Olson?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go ahead and comment on
Senate Bill 174. In fact, I would like to go ahead and move to rescind our action in failing to adopt Amendment Number 4 that I presented the other day, which would be to delete Section Number 1 of this bill.
Senator Olson, do you wish to speak to that?
I'd be glad to, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much for this opportunity. Over the last several days, my office, which is just around the corner here, has been inundated by members of different school districts throughout the state of Alaska that have come in and overwhelmingly, or has come on in, and not one school district has been in favor of Senate Bill 174. I am faced with not looking just at, and we are all faced with not just looking at a majority, we're looking at an overwhelming majority of school districts that are in opposition to this bill. It's, as one school district put it, you're taking from one child and giving to another child, which is not the way we should be perceived as putting bills out here. And that's the reason I go ahead and present this motion. In fact, I'd like to go ahead and ask if we could have Mr. Carl Rose comment on the position of the school districts, the association that's been in here this week. Who could, Mr. Chairman?
Come on up, Carl, if you wish. For clarification's sake, this bill gives more money to the school district, it even gives more money to the North Slope. So it making the case that it takes away from one child and gives to another, I don't think is quite accurate. This bill actually gives more to each. Mr. Rose, before you do, I have a note here. Mr. Rose, please state your name and affiliation for the record and testify, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. We have been in town this weekend, and as far back as last February when we came to town, it was on a different issue at that time. We were talking about Senate Bill 94, but more specifically with this bill. We're very concerned with the movement of this bill, not only because of the issue of fairness, but also one of redistribution. What we're concerned about is the future. We're talking about what happens to the state of Alaska as we look forward in terms of ensuring that our children are going to be successful at these high school qualifying exams. We're pleading with people to take a look at a longer view, a long-term view, a fiscal plan, if you will, that helps project us into the future and take advantage of the next 4 years, possibly 5 years of the Constitutional Budget Reserve. Well, what's happening with this bill is this is a regressive approach in terms of how we address the future. And I'm not being disrespectful. I'm simply saying that by using a vehicle like this, it doesn't project us forward. We have been talking amongst ourselves, and we're united in the association, that we are opposed to a redistribution or, in essence, taking from one child and giving to another. That's another way of defining it. That's the way we look at it. We're here to support all kids. We're looking at helping all kids be successful, helping all kids try to reach that bar. And so in that sense, we are adamantly opposed to a bill that would, in essence, take from one area of the state to redistribute to the other area, because we're talking about adequacy. The issue of adequacy is not being addressed. And so we are in favor of an increase in the foundation formula. We are in favor of redistributing money by an adjusted method, as we have in a foundation formula. We do not call for any changes to Senate Bill 36 until we have more appropriate information and indices to make those decisions. But we're very concerned about a bill like this that would seriously alter the playing field today without a full address of the foundation formula.
Thank you, Mr.
I'll
Rose.
I'll answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Can we have just a brief at ease?
There is a...
There's a motion before us to rescind our action on Amendment Number 4. For failing to take action on Amendment Number 4. The objection is maintained. Andy?
Senator Ward? Senator Wilkin?
No.
Senator Osterman?
Yes.
Senator Green?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Lehman?
No.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
No.
Senator Kelly?
No.
3A, 5A.
Okay, we have failed to rescind our action on failing to adopt Amendment Number 1. That brings Version C before us again. Senator Wilkin.
Chairman, I move to report Senate Bill 174 from committee with individual recommendations. and the fiscal note that reflects the most current Senate finance version.
Are there objections? Senator Hoffman?
Mr. Chairman, at the last meeting when we had this bill up for consideration, there was authority given to the co-chairman on title. Is this the final title?
Yes. Yes, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you.
Is there objection to moving it from committee? Senator Olson?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Realizing that this bill put forth by the Senate has the most effect on the North Slope Borough, I request that we bring the North Slope Borough superintendent up here to give us the effects of what it's going to have, positive or negative.
Is he here?
She,
or she?
She. Yes.
Please come up, state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Frida Arnhart, the superintendent of the North Slope Borough School District. I would respectfully like to state that the Senate Bill 174 will be very devastating to our school district. It does take away our state funding, which is in essence a little over $9 million. Also, taking away our state funding, that will also mean that we cannot maintain effort to have our grants, to maintain our grants, which is a little over $2 million. So in essence, we would be losing approximately $12 to $13 million if this bill would pass. Our stance is that, like Mr. Rose said, we do not believe that you should be taking away from one district to fund the other districts. This is not good for all children. And we would respectfully like to ask the questions, if we would receive no state funding, would we still be required to follow, you know, state mandates? Would we still have to do all the reporting that we would do, or that we're required to do? We still want to maintain our standards. We have those in place. We do want to be accountable. We do want to go with the benchmarks, the exit exam. We do believe in all of those, but we also would like to say that we'd like to have money in the foundation formula for all children. So respectfully, we'd like you to reconsider and not take away from the North Slope children to fund other children in the state.
Thank you for your testimony. The motion is before us to move version C from committee. Is the objection maintained? Yes. Andy?
Senator Osterman?
No.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Lehman?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Ward? Senator Wilkins?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
5 yeas, 3 nays.
With that, Senate Bill 174, as amended, version C, has moved from committee with accompanying revised fiscal notes. That brings Senator Cowdery's bill before us. Senator Cowdery, are you presenting 83 first?
Pardon?
Are you presenting Senate Bill 83 first?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Senator Cowdery.
Yeah. I'm John Cowdery, Senate. Anyway, we have Senate Bill, I think, is 83 on forced accounts. Came to my attention in our hearings that we had in Senate Transportation that, in my opinion, is abuse of the forced account. And what my bill would do would just simply limit the cap on the forced account to $250,000, and still could. You know, in our Senate Finance, or in our Senate Transportation hearing, we heard that testimony when the question was asked in rural Alaska, what's the smallest amount of or size of contract that's let generally for competitive bid? It was stated around $100,000 to $150,000 is in rural Alaska let for competitive bid. And I think this is all this does is say, if it's over the $250,000. That this just caps at $250,000, it allows Alaskan contractors to bid on these projects. That's in essence what the bill does. I think I passed out some charts. This chart that you might have, it shows that various force accounts in 3 year total of $33 million that was done in 98, 99, and 2000. And so anyway, I think that it shows the amount of in-house and other private contracts that we've given. And like I said, the St. Mary's project came to mind on this project. It's a $3.5 million force account. They're going to use state workers, hire the local people, make them state workers to do this project. They're going to have to train them. They're going to use government-owned equipment, and they're not going to be paying Davis-Bacon that every other contractor, private contractor. That's why they're joined, going to include these employees in Local 71. So I think Alaska contractors will be denied the opportunity to bid this contract. I've had several, or quite a few, or a lot of contractors phone in support of this, and I don't think there's any justification to have a force account over the $250,000 limit that I'm trying to achieve.
Thank you, Senator Cowdery. Senator Huffman?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, when we're looking at rural Alaska, there are very, very few jobs out there, and many of the communities utilize this force account not only to provide jobs, but I think that there's a strong argument that can be made that if the local people work on these jobs, they will take more pride in the final product, and therefore take better care of the final product. And I know that everyone wants to make sure that the infrastructure out in rural Alaska is well maintained. You know, and I can see where Senator Cowdery might be concerned about force accounting, but it's not that big of a problem. When you look at the amount of dollars that are being utilized under the force accounting, it only represents 4%. 96% of the projects out there in rural Alaska go to statewide bid. Why should a contractor be worried about 4% of the money that's going out that not only will help these people out in rural Alaska where there are very few jobs get those jobs, because in many cases they may not be trained, but it's also helping those people develop a skill. You're providing income, you're providing a skill, and you're making those jobs out there possibly be better kept because there's self-pride in those jobs. For 4%, the argument, what is the argument for this legislation other than, well, I got 96%, but if we change this to 250, maybe I'll get 98%. And we'll leave a little 2% for the people out there to get their contracts. You know, this bill simply does not make sense to me, Mr. Chairman. And I wonder, what percent do your contractors want? You know, 96% seems pretty adequate to me. How much are they interested in getting?
Senator Olson? Yeah. Oh, excuse me, Senator Cowdery.
Well, you know, $33 million to put out the competitive bid, I think that's a substantial amount, regardless of the percent. I haven't been a contractor myself and have did several projects in the rural Alaska. And believe me, a contractor is in it to make money. If they can hire local people to do the work that's out there, they don't have to pay per diem, they don't have to set up a camp, and this and that. It's the contractor's benefit. And I've always believed the contractor's in it to make money, you know. And if they can save money by hiring local people. But when I did an airport job, for instance, we had nobody that was skilled that could run the graders that we needed to do the airport. So I imported them. We had nobody skilled to maintain the equipment, so I imported them. Majority of work, I think I hired 60 local people in Kotlik to do some bank erosion work, and they were very good, and they did it, and we paid them Davis-Bacon to do that. So that's my answer, if that answers.
Senator Rolls, Senator Hoffman, did you have a follow-up?
Well, I do have a follow-up. You know, if we're not going to even allow 4% of the projects to be force accounted, you know, these people are out there learning the skill. And by doing that,
maybe they will get up to a position where they can get in on the other 96% and get the training necessary to be part of the unions. You know, it doesn't seem to me for these rural communities to be asking so much that they be allocated a mere 4%. You know, the dollars are tremendous when you're talking about them, but the percentage is staggering. 96% of the dollars are going out to statewide bid. For anybody, that should be sufficient. They should be overjoyed.
Well, I just don't believe that. I believe that the rural people are entitled to the same wage Davis Bacon as any other. So anyway, I don't want to debate this part too long.
Senator Olson?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Senator Cowdery, you had made the comment during your previous statement, sponsor statement, that under the force account, these employees become state employees with state benefits.
State employees, in our testimony in Senate Transportation, it was said that they were going to be unionized by Local 71 and that they weren't going to pay Davis Bacon, and that's in the testimony, if that clears up.
It's my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that at least in previous projects that have to do with force accounts, that they have not been state employees, they have been employees other than that. And for those of us here that are business people at the table, including yourself, Mr. Senator Cowdery, when you hear of Davis Bacon wages, it's not that you kind of get this idea that I'm not sure that I can afford that as a small business person. And right now, at least what I'm hearing from you is that there is a sympathetic attitude toward the local people. And I think that's what we all are here for, is to make sure we have local guys need to get the work. Over this last week, I've had a number of phone calls having to do with Anchorage International Airport, where they've decided to go ahead and consolidate the parking garage, the snow removal, and the shuttle bus service so that people within our state can't even go ahead and bid on this multi-million dollar project because of the pre-qualification portion that they don't qualify for. So I think we need to be very concerned that we don't start getting into this where we start getting so streamlined or that we get so in tune that we don't have work for our local people. And like I said, this Anchorage International Airport bid that's come up is very concerning. And so I guess with that in mind, one of the next question I have for you, are you aware of or do you know of any public or state construction efforts where competitive bidding for state contracts is or is not used?
Pardon?
Or you have, for example, the railroad. They're obviously a state entity, but they're not really necessarily constrained by those state contracts.
That's a problem.
University of Alaska, another entity that's outside the purview of the state.
Now, this bill addresses mainly DOT projects, but
okay.
I agree. But getting back to the airport, I had the bill in my committee that developed the expansion about 3 years ago, two or three years ago, and it was part of the bill that said that they had to put a number of contracts out so that Alaskans could qualify to bid it rather than try to attract outside national firms. And if they haven't adhered to that, I'm going to ask DOT to that. But at the time that we had the bill, they assured me that they split this the international airport up so that locals could bond it and bid. And I don't know if any outside, I'm talking about foreign people.
Lower 48, you mean? Outside of Alaska. We're not calling foreign.
Well, I don't know what you call. I mean, that's been a debate. They have offices here. Are they outside? I mean, are they considered? I know how I've been in Alaska about 50 years, and I think Fairbanks and Anchorage, if it's outside of Anchorage, and outside means if it's outside of Fairbanks, that's a perception that I have, or Kenai or whatever, but being in reality.
With all due respect, I was under the impression that it was the sovereign state of Anchorage and the rest of it was Alaska.
Senator Olson, before you continue, I'd like to keep Senator Cowdery here. We have a number of people to testify. If I could get the public testimony out of the way, and then we could go back to talking with Senator Cowdery, because these people have been waiting for a while. Is a quick question?
Actually, just a quick comment, Mr. Chairman. I've just passed out a several pieces of paper that show the forest account businesses, not just to Bush, Alaska. We're seeing places like Talkeetna with $6 million, Seldovia with $4 million, Whittier with $4 million, Healy Lake with $1 million, and Nenana with $4 million. We're dealing with more than just Bush, Alaska. We're dealing with forest accounts that have saved the state a fair amount of money. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Olson. I'm going to go to public testimony at this time. And there are a number of people that are offline and in LIOs around the state as well. Let's start in the Nome LIO with Mr. Mike Wassman. Mr. Wassman,
thank you.
In the LIO there, are you prepared to testify?
Yes.
Barely hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
A little better if you could speak up just a bit.
Okay, my name is, Mike Wassman. I'm an engineer with Coeric Incorporated up here in Nome. We're the regional nonprofit corporation. We have just entered into a contract with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Alaska Region Office, to develop a regional transportation program using Indian Reservation Roads money that comes from T21. Currently, the Bureau brings into this state about $20 million annually, which can be used for many different transportation projects. The contract that Coeric has entered into represents all of the villages in our region from Shishmaref down to St. Michael, including Gamble, Savunga, and Little Diomede. These funds provide a very big opportunity to construct needed transportation projects out in this area. The Department of Transportation STIP project, or STIP, contains very few projects for our region, and if there are projects, they're pushed out so far it's hard to believe that they will be constructed in the foreseeable future. With these funds, we intend to look at different opportunities with DOT as far as possibly providing capital matching money for some of the projects that are listed in the STIP, and to hopefully reduce the burden on the DOT capital improvement program, and at the same time construct the needed transportation projects out in this area. By passing this bill, I believe that this will prevent that opportunity from taking place, and exploring these opportunities for cost sharing and other innovative methods for getting these transportation needs met. Before I worked with Coeric, I was with the Department of Transportation, and I worked in airport and highway construction in the Western District here. And I traveled to nearly every village in the region or the district, and I've worked on various projects in a number of villages. It has been my experience that, in general, that when I work with the contractors, that they generally bring most of their own personnel in, and they hire a few of the local residents for, let's say, laborer-type positions or other positions like that. They generally don't have a lot of time and money to be training these people to run the big trucks and be operators and to be surveyors. I have worked with a few contractors that have been very good about providing local hire opportunities, but for the most part, those opportunities, my experience was that the contractors were not very good about putting the local people to work. And so in closing, I think that this bill is it will have big effects on the ability of DOT to manage their affairs. It will have impacts on the ability of our program, and if there were other tribal consortiums in the state that were doing the same thing as us, it would also limit their opportunities to work cooperatively with the Department of Transportation to get these transportation needs met sooner. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wassman. We're going to go to the Fairbanks LIO. Mr. Charles Wiggers, if you could keep your testimony fairly brief. We have a number of people to testify on this subject. I'd appreciate it.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Actually, just speak up just a little bit, please.
Sure. My name is Charles Wiggers. I came to speak in support of Senate Bill 83, an act relating to construction of highways by the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. As you know, it's the general policy of the state of Alaska to require the construction of all public works under bid contracts in accordance with Alaska Statute 3630, the State Procurement Code. However, the intent of the legislature has been circumvented in recent years by the Department of Transportation, most notably in the St. Mary's Airport Road Rehabilitation Project. By choosing to complete this project by force account, the state is going into direct competition with the contracting community. In addition, the state is ignoring the standards of the state itself set for public works construction. The state has determined that the prevailing wage is mandated that the prevailing wage be paid on all public work projects with very few exceptions. In the St. Mary's Airport Road case, as justification for using federal funds on a project being constructed by Forks account, state DOT has determined that it would be cheaper for the state to pay lower wages than it would be to hire a contractor that was required to pay prevailing wages and to earn a profit. Using an economically depressed local labor force to do Forks account work for the state at a reduced level of pay is inherently wrong. Furthermore, the residents hired for Forks account construction will be required to join Local 71, the state employees union, and to pay into the pension trust, insurance fund, and union dues. They will see little, if any, benefit for these deductions on a short-term project, further reducing their actual wage. Public works procurement should be accomplished by competitive bidding as set forth in the Alaska statute, using an economic disaster exception, cost savings justifications, by paying less than prevailing wage, or saying that competitive ceiling bidding would be impractical or contrary to public interest does not stand up to scrutiny. I object to using forced count construction on public works because it's contrary to state policy and it restricts free and open competition. And that is the end of my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Wiggers. We're going to go to the Anchorage LIO. Mr. Dick Catnaugh. Hello, Dick. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, thank you very much for having the opportunity to speak to you today on Senate Bill 83. I would like to say, first of all, that AGC disagrees with some of the testimony that implies that contractors do not hire local. As Senator Cowdery indicated, it's money in the bank for a contractor that hires local. We're not the smartest people in the world. We recognize that. But the cost of transporting somebody to rural Alaska to pay per diem adds anywhere from $10 to $15 an hour to his wages. It's much cheaper to hire somebody local. Senate Bill 83 does a number of things. First of all, it sets parameters for using force account. We recognize force account is one of the procurement methods available to any public entity. Force account really merely represents the ability of a government entity to use government entity workforce to do work that might be done in the public sector or in the private sector. It is sometimes very efficient to use that workforce, and we encourage that where applicable. What this bill does is set a limit of $250,000 and said anything above that has to go competitive bid. It also eliminates the opportunity for the Department of Transportation to use a public interest finding. We're finding more and more that public interest findings are perfunctory. Anytime the Department of Transportation justifies a cost savings by, as we just pointed out, using government workers when the public sector is required by law to use pay Davis-Bacon wages, that's a disadvantage. The state could basically take over the entire construction industry if they so desired by using that same logic. That's wrong. We're against it. We encourage you to support this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Catnaugh. We're going to go back to, actually, we're going to go to the off-net site. Mr. Walton Smith, if you could keep your comments to about 3 minutes. We're running out of time. Mr. Smith, state your name and affiliation.
Yes, I'm city manager at St. Mary's. I guess I feel I'm one of the people that helped to generate this controversy. My job as city manager, I have to go out and raise $300,000 to $500,000 a year in outside funds every year in order to keep minimal services going, in order to pay employees that work 3 to 5 years for me, the same as a starting janitor gets at the school district. These villages out here are in tough shape financially, both the individuals in the town as well as city governments. We had the fish disaster. I bugged the state for over 2.5 years to get them to allow us to do this project. As soon as they did allow us to do the project, I'm told that there were repeated meetings with the AGC, the governor's staff, and representatives of unions, threats of suit, threats of legislation, etc. I guess my concern, as much as Senator Hoffman indicated, isn't 96% enough? And I guess also I'm concerned when I keep hearing the word abuse. Abuse by whose definition? It sounds like only the contractors are seeing abuse. Gentlemen, this is rural Alaska. Our people are out here with one of the highest unemployment rates anywhere in the U.S., and we're being begrudged a $3 million project. Right now, it looks like we're having a two-pronged attack. Number one, we're being told that force account is an abuse of public funds. Number two, I was read with interest the April Alaska Contractor magazine. There was a story that's in there that indicates that the AG is a friend of the working man, a friend of the bush, dogs, motherhood, and apple pie. And is no mention of force account work, of course. If you pass this, $250,000 is nowhere close to enough to cover many of the projects that are currently being done under ICE-T funding, other funding, that are being combined with public health work that allow us to put in water and sewer systems for people that are still on honey buckets. And I guess last but not least, I keep hearing the argument that somehow I've done a disservice to a man that's on unemployment if he still has benefits, or his wife is getting AFDC, if possible, to feed the kids. He's living in a shack, and somehow or another I've done him a disservice because during the course of one of these projects, he'll only gross $1,500 a week as versus $1,800 a week. His alternative is zero per week, and I just don't see that I've done him a disservice with force account work. Again, I think that, you know, I see, and I've got a copy of the AGC position paper here that was issued through Senator Cowdery's office. AGC supports Senate Bill 83 but believes that it should be expanded to include all public works projects undertaken or funded in whole or part by the state of Alaska. I guess I think AGC is greedy and that what they're talking about doing is mean-spirited. People out here need to learn trades. They need to make a living. I need to keep people supported and do my best to train them. People here want to work. They don't want welfare. And this is something that's simply going to, for a small percentage of the funds, take away the ability of local people to work for a living. And along with welfare, I'm not sure what they're going to do.
Mr. Smith, could you wrap up your comments, please? We're running out of time. I'm sorry. Wrap up. We'll go to Mr. Bert Bell in Fairbanks, at the Fairbanks LIO. Bert, could you be sure and kind of hover over that microphone so we can hear you?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, a little better if you could.
Okay, it's about 3 inches from my mouth, so anything else will pass disease here. I'm Bert Bell, president of AGC, and I am speaking in support of Senate Bill 83. We, I guess in one sense, thank Mr. Smith for bringing St. Mary's out into the limelight, because that is the straw that broke the camel's back with us. We have watched contractors leave the bush. Sam Bryce this year sold his barge equipment. He supported more village hire than probably force account work that you're talking about over the years. He's done a tremendous job. As president of Gem Company, we have built in the range of 100 bush jobs that are either barge or airplane only, and we've done a lot of work in the St. Mary's area. We always hired locally. We always put the locals to work in every facet of the work. We trained them. We had a safe working program. I don't know Mr. Smith, and I don't know the system he set up, but I would like to read his training program, his safety programs that deal with long career and safe work. You kill someone on the end of a front-end loader, that's your fault, because you are putting people out that are not skilled and that are not worked. As a contractor, if we hire those bush people, the rural areas, whatever, however you, the people that work for us, have future career opportunities. What you're offering them is a flash-in-the-pan job where the contracting community can offer long-term career opportunity. We have a pipeline coming up. What are you doing to get those rural people prepared to build on the pipeline? The contracting community knows the skills that are needed and can provide the training, the work, besides in one single village. St. Mary's is, I've read the best interest findings. It's a joke. It has nothing to do with the wage it's paid. Construction is about production. The actual dollars per hour the men make is not an overpayment to them. They earn every penny of it. And to say that because you live in a rural community, you deserve less money than someone who lives in an urban community is absolutely absurd. I think you are doing a terrible disservice to the people of the villages by this type of construction. I'll end my testimony, and I can answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Senator Olson, if you could make a comment rather than a question, I do want to move on to the next.
Okay, I'm going to ask Mr. Bell a question, Mr. Chairman.
Can we wait till we get the other ones on? Bert, if you could hang around there for a while, I can get these other people to testify. Senator Olson has a question for you.
I will do it.
Okay. We're going to go back to the Anchorage LIO. Mr. Eden Larson, you could keep your comments to about 3 minutes if possible. I've got an eye on the clock here, and we're running out of time.
Thank you. I will keep my comments brief. My name is Eden Larson. I'm Executive Director of Associated Builders and Contractors. We also support Senate Bill 83. Just two comments. I'd like to reiterate what Mr. Bell has said. I recently met with a contractor who has done $1 to $2 million worth of work in rural Alaska, based in rural Alaska for many years. Last year did $17,000 worth of business and was forced to lay off their permanent year-round employees. We do not understand how the state competing with businesses, many of which are based in rural Alaska and employ people year-round in rural Alaska, is a benefit to that economy. Second, the 94%, I don't understand the logic. I do not believe that that's a static figure as expressed here today. The use of force account is growing, and as Mr. Katnaw has stated, given the logic that the state is using to support its use of force account, the state could easily argue that they should be doing all construction. In an environment where we are looking at ways to privatize services for the state, it doesn't make sense that the state should be moving into the construction business. Thank you. That'll end my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. I'm going to go back to the off-net site. Mr. Ken Evans. Mr. Evans, the phones, we seem to always have a hard time with the off-net sites being able to hear you, so you're just going to have to speak as loudly and clearly as possible, and if I could again ask that your comments be to the point, because we're really running out of time. Thank you, Mr. Evans. Go ahead and testify.
Thank you very much. I will do my best at the volume. My name is Ken Evans. I am with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, also known as ANTHC. We are a nonprofit consortium of Alaska Native Tribes and Tribal Health Organizations that is responsible for the management of statewide health services programs within the Alaska Native Health Network, most notably in rural Alaska, and most notably in my division, sanitation facilities and improvements such as roadways. The ANTHC manages a statewide rural sanitation infrastructure development, design, and construction program in partnership with the communities and the tribes in Alaska. Most of our projects are funded through multiple federal and state agencies. Some of these projects include contributions from the state of Alaska, Department of Transportation, to construct boardwalks and access roads, again, to sanitation facility sites such as solid waste disposal areas or sewage treatment lagoons. The local and tribal governments often select force account construction as a means to construct important facilities. We feel this is one of several construction options available to rural communities. The force account construction empowers the rural communities by leveraging the traditional benefits of construction, and we feel that these leveraged benefits include providing local employment where they oftentimes are not, expanding the base of locally available skilled workers, strengthening the local economy by building local leadership skills and management capacity, which lasts beyond the project itself, and enhancing infrastructure sustainability because of the local knowledge of having constructed it, helped managing it, and the capacity that was gained in all facets of the construction. The ANTHC strongly recommends that the alternative of force account construction remain available to the communities and tribes within Alaska. That concludes my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Also, for those of you who are going to testify on Senate Bill 152, and I notice a number of you have also testified on Senate Bill 83, what I'm going to do is we are scheduled for an evening meeting, and I'm going to try to get through all this testimony and then put Senate Bill 83 aside, and then if we are lucky enough, we'll go through the people who are left to testify on 152 if possible. Depending on what the clock looks like. So going to testify on 152. If you could hang on just a little while longer, we'll get your testimony on 152. But just for your information, we'll be bringing the bill up tonight. And if you wish to return, if there's going to be a teleconference on that, I don't know. We can have that teleconference if there's a desire. Where were we? Back to Fairbanks. Mr. Tony Johansson. You could, again, keep your comments as brief as possible.
Thank you. My name is Tony Johansson. I want to testify on Senate Bill 83. I have just a couple of quick points. I'll try not to go over what other people have talked about earlier. First of all, the argument that the contracting community is getting 98% of what amounts to a $463 million program is ludicrous. We're getting probably half of that, if that, after you take out the monies that are spent by planning, both at statewide and on the regional level, the design groups, and in construction administration. The contracting community is not getting 96% of the dollars that are out there. Another quick point about this program is that it goes far beyond the urban areas. This also affects work that's taking place in communities such as Fairbanks. In Fairbanks, in federal fiscal year 2001, there will be 7 projects being constructed in the Fairbanks area this year on a force account basis with total disk length of about 11 and a half miles. Those 7 projects have a value of about $800,000, and there's several contractors in the Fairbanks community that could do that work. I guess one third point I'd like to make is it appears to me that in the rural areas, they're looking on these FHWA funds as filling the role of a social program. I think that there are other programs that are in our system right now that address those social needs. These FHWA funds are made available to the state to construct highways in as efficient a manner as possible, and I believe that is best accomplished through a competitive bid process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johansson. If we could go to April Ferguson in Anchorage at the Anchorage LIO.
Chairman, can you hear me? Hello?
Hello.
Yes, my name is April Ferguson, and I work for Bristol Bay Native Corporation. I'm here to testify against SB 83. I believe that this bill begins a process of removing a tool that local governments can choose to utilize to help maintain cash economy in their communities, to help keep people in their communities by encouraging local hire. And the reason the communities want to use the force account tool is that the contractors coming in don't. And I applaud those contractors that do, but I know from working in construction myself for 20 years that there is no open door for women, for African Americans, or for Natives. There is a very small percentage, and there is no long-term future in the construction industry for those people. Force accounting allows these jobs to stay in the villages, to maintain rural infrastructure, to keep people who have no other opportunity for a limited in that limited cash economy to make something over the summer. It's a creative tool also, allowing the community and local governments to combine their income streams to bring projects into the village. And I see this particular legislation as another in a long line of initiatives that we've seen recently that have a very negative impact on rural Alaska, that are being taken at the expense of rural Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Ferguson. Mr. Watterson?
Yes, my name is Bill Watterson. I'm in the Anchorage LIO, and I'll just be brief. I support the Senate Bill 83, and I support the comments made by Dick Kavanaugh and other speakers in support of this bill. There's a couple of issues that I'm concerned about, and that is the buildup of state supervisory forces to manage this work, which I think historically we would find after that buildup is made, it would not recede. To be probably special purchases of equipment, which the contractors would already have on hand, which would increase the expense. It's already been commented about the substandard wages, which is, in effect, really being discriminatory against the local people, if a local hire, if it's done force account. And finally, from what discussions we've had in the past within, with different people in the industry, I don't think the state has a methodology for accountability to assess the overhead and that to this force account projects to properly come up with how much the total cost is. And so they're kind of working with mirrors when they say that even with substandard wages that they can do it cheaper. That concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Watterson. Mr. Richard, Bernard Richard, you are the final off-net testifier. If you could please keep your testimony brief, and then we want to go back to the Fairbanks LIO because Senator Olson has a question for Mr. Bell. Go ahead, Mr. Richard, and please remember those off-net sites are difficult to hear, so speak clearly as possible.
Thank you. My name is Bernard Richard, and I am with U.S. Economic Development Administration. And certainly we support a variety of partnerships that may come along, and it looks to us as if there really is enough projects to serve the needs of many different entities and organizations. One of the most effective tools that we have found among our projects in the 17 years that I've been doing projects in Alaska is to use force accounts. Not only does it provide training and whatever else that goes with that within the community, the funds turn over, they are respent locally, and in general, we can say that the majority of our projects have actually been cheaper by using force account than if they had been put out for bid. My agency personally prefers to do contract because the accountability is a lot easier. We are willing, under conditions where the local village or tribe or the municipality can make a case that they have the capacity to do it well, that you really end up with a project which the local people do take pride in. It provides training, also funds into the community, and then in the long term provides the training which will lead to the capacity of the local people to actually be hired for local jobs under Davis-Bacon. One of the things that I think that the state really needs to consider is if the projects are going to cost more through contracting, is the state going to have additional funds to put up to make these projects work? There are other examples that I would like to give, but because of the time, I will cut it short. But I do think that cooperatively, that force account is a very valuable tool, in especially rural Alaska. It's been used successfully from Saxman to Apka, to Minto, to Haines, to Ketchikan, to Chivac, to Tlaloc, and these are projects that have turned out very well. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Senator Olson, you had a question of Mr. Bell in Fairbanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bell, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
There seems to be a contradiction, or at least that's what my perception is, between what the contractors view and the village people's view about local hire. Do you have, I guess, what is your response to that when we hear people from rural Alaska saying they seem to be less than pleased with the local hire situation?
There seems to me, I don't know who has done an inventory of the people that are working on the projects in the local communities. I know that as Gem Company, where we've performed work all over the West Coast, North Coast, Interior Alaska, we have always hired from the local community first. It makes sense from a economic standpoint. First of all, you can find reasonably qualified help, and you can provide the training and the skills at less expense out in the village or in the, you know, whatever area you're at. It is better for village relations. You can work deals with the cities to rent their equipment. Where they are saying it is a broad brush, there seems to be a fear
of those that are doing the force accounting work, perhaps it's their jobs, I don't know. I do know you are finding fewer and fewer contractors that are working in the bush because there's less and less work available, therefore it's becoming less of a viable industry. Ourselves as Gem Company, we've almost quit bidding in the bush because you cannot afford to create a business with as much work as is going force account.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bell. I do have another comment or a question for you, if I could.
Yes.
It's come to my attention over the last number of years that many contractors, or at least our discussion this morning, has been dealing with paying the employees or those people that are working under in less than supervisory positions the Davis-Bacon wage. And it's my understanding that many contractors pay less than Davis-Bacon wages in the private sector, for example, up on the North Slope where there are a large number of non-Davis-Bacon wage earners. And since you are associated with Gem Construction, it's my understanding that Gem Construction also has non-union or an associate that pays less than Davis-Bacon wages. Is that true?
No, that's absolutely false. Virtually all the work we do, private or public, and especially for the last 7-8 years, all the work that's been done, it has been private and public for us, has been Davis-Bacon wages. Up on north, they have different negotiated agreements where I believe they pay on the maintenance side 80% of the Davis-Bacon wages, but the hours they're offering typically are 7-10s and 7-12s, which make up for the income.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Bert. At this time, I'm going to set Senate Bill 83 aside, and I want to take the public testimony on Senate Bill 152. A lot of the people that were here to testify on 183, or excuse me, on 83, are also signed up to testify on 152. So please keep your remarks to 3 minutes. Senator Wilken, we're going to bring these bills up tonight if you have want to discuss them tonight.
I'll make my comments tonight. Mr. Chairman, I just want to let you know why I'm supporting this. While all the people are online, this is real life stuff. And let me just say how I came into this and take 1 minute to do it. I got a call last fall from a friend of mine whose company is trying to build their business in Fairbanks. They have families on the payroll that actually, and they're paid by construction work. They were ready to bid on the St. Mary's project, $3 million project. That was part of their plan. And suddenly the state takes it off the table and says, we're going to do it in some other manner. I think there is a place in our state government for force accounting for a couple of reasons we need to talk about here. But this isn't about 4% or 0.4% or 40%. It's about an opportunity for free enterprise to bid on business in the bush and in urban Alaska. And this is about drawing a fence around this. And if it's not $3 million today, maybe it's $4 million tomorrow and it's $10 million a year from now. I want to draw a fence around this thing called force accounting and make sure that the department has to meet some limit so that they don't take money away from private industry who is trying to build a business in Alaska. And that's why I'm supportive of 83, and I want to let the people know that we're online.
We'll have further discussion on Senate Bill 83 tonight. We're going to have Senate Bill 152 brought before us. And to the ladies and gentlemen who are going to testify on 152, I reiterate, please be quick. We have a floor session that has already begun. And I would like to get the public testimony portion of Senate Bill 152 out of the way, and then we can discuss it further tonight. If you'd like to come back, we will teleconference it so that you can listen off at the different teleconference sites or be available for questions and answers. Mr. Catnaugh, you want to go ahead again on Senate Bill 152?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate having the opportunity again to speak on this bill. I've already submitted our AGC's position paper, and yesterday I emailed a long response to the Department of Law's position on paying interest on claims, so I don't think I need to go into any of that. I'll just reserve time for any questions that you might have, but I'll pass to other people that have something to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Catnaugh. Mr. Bell, would you like to testify on 152?
Yes, very briefly. I'm sorry that you guys have to take time and that we have to take time to even address this bill. It is absolutely wrong to use somebody's money and not pay interest on it. If the state loses and the contractor wins, the amount that the contractor wins on that interest from the time it started to the time it's paid to him should have interest as in any other bank loan, any other industry in the state. It's as it's being used right now, it's absolutely wrong, and this bill would make that right.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Mr. Johansson in the Fairbanks LIO as well.
Yes, I wanted to speak in support of this bill. I think that the majority of people in the, certainly in the private sector, and I know that a year ago when I was in the public sector, that many people felt that it was equitable that people be paid interest on money that was due them. The reason that it was not paid is there were court cases that came down that legally the state not only didn't have to, but couldn't pay interest on that money. So I think you'd find many people in the public sector support this bill as well, and I would speak in support of it.
Thank you, Mr. Johansson. Mr. Kevin Brady in Anchorage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kevin Brady. I'm with the law firm of Olds, Morris, and Rinker & Baker. I've had the pleasure of being involved in the claims handling process for approximately 8 different contractors. What I can tell you is the actual cost of this bill is going to be a function of time. In other words, depending on how protracted the claims process is, the costs go up. Passing this bill would give state agencies some incentive to settle these things up front where the costs are necessarily less. That has been my experience, and I would certainly urge that you pass this bill, and I await any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Mr. Bill Reno?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also testifying on behalf of this bill. I'm also with Olds, Morris, and Rinker & Baker, and again, I've been involved in representing contractors over the last several years, and and helped them through the dispute resolution process that has been enforced by DOT. Again, I'd just like to reiterate, that dispute resolution process is broken. It's broken badly. We have worked with AGC, and Dick's working with DOT now to try to fix that. But I would like to emphasize that one of the biggest things that can help fix that dispute resolution process is the passage of this bill. Because, as Mr. Brady mentioned, it gives DOT a strong incentive to sit down and negotiate early resolution of claims with contractors. And, we're a couple of attorneys talking to you folks, but I want to tell you this is not in our best interest. We've made a lot of money off these claims in the last few years, and quite frankly, we'd like to see them go away. It's just a question of fairness here. It's a question of fairness. The contracting community has not been treated fairly with regard to this issue. That concludes my statement.
Thank you. Is it Caitlin Markley? Go ahead and testify. State your name and affiliation, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Caitlin Markley, and I work for the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. ADA has delegation of authority from DOT for construction of our development finance program, those projects that we own and operate. And this bill could result in additional interest payments on those contract-related claims. Now, there's no way to predict what this is going to cost in the future. In the perfect world, we would have no future claims, but reality is that we probably will. ADA Development Finance Funds generally don't use general fund money. However, Healy and the DeLong Mountain Transportation System did use general fund money as grants. Additional costs such as the claims are then passed on to project proponents that are funded through ADA funds. In the past, we've had small to multi-million dollar claims that have resulted in the negotiated settlement. For example, in 1999, there was a $1.17 million claim that ADA paid to a contractor. Hypothetically, at 10% compounded interest for 18 months, this would have resulted in an additional $188,000 payment. Had we settled early on with the amount of the claim that was submitted, this could have been in the multi-million dollar area. If ADA funds are required, ADA's net income declines, resulting in a decrease in annual dividend, which, again, that's all hypothetical. And in closing, I'd just like to say that SB 152 could affect economic developers in the future, ADA and the general fund. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Markley. Ms. Larson?
Thank you. I will waive my comments and simply say that Associated Builders and Contractors also supports SB 152.
Thank you. Mr. Bill Watterson?
Yeah, I just support Senate Bill 152, and I'd like to give an example that supports the previous testimony. A couple months ago in the Anchorage paper, there was a comment by State of Alaska DOT project engineer that if a contractor on the Seward Highway did not complete the project because he is unable to settle claims, that it wasn't a problem because the bonding company would have to finish the job. That kind of indicates the ignorance of people in DOT because they apparently don't realize if a bonding company ever finishes one job for a contractor, that contractor is history. And that is not good faith on the part of the state. I think I echo what the attorneys here said, that for the most part, I don't think any contractor would wish to get $1 of interest. They would be more, they'd be a lot happier if they could just settle the claims. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Watterson. And our last testifier, Mr. Dugan, OffNet. Again, keep in mind that the OffNet sites really have, we have a hard time hearing them. So go ahead, Mr. Dugan.
I'll pass at this time and send you an hello letter and let somebody else speak. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Pam, are you going to be here tonight? Okay. That concludes public testimony, I believe. Double check here. And we'll take both of these bills up tonight at 6 o'clock, or possibly a call. Chair, do you have a copy? 6 o'clock tonight, we'll readjourn and reconvene, yes, and take up these matters. Senator Osterman?
Since you're no vote, just these two bills we're going to take up tonight?
Yes.
Good. And is the Budget Conference Committee going to still meet at 3 this afternoon?
I honestly don't know. I'll check my, I hadn't heard otherwise, I guess is what I have to say. No further business for the committee. We are recessed until 6 o'clock tonight. Finance, as you recall, we adjourned, or excuse me, we recessed this morning, and we were going to come back and take up SB 83 and SB 152. 83 is the construction of highways under force accounting bill. And we're also going to be moving out House Bill 90, which was the school bonds bill that was the technical fix from last year. That should just take a few minutes. Senator Cowdery, did you have anything to add to any of the testimony? We do have some other people here in the audience to speak.
I have nothing. I think everything was said that I had to say and more this morning in the testimony. So
okay.
On 83, I'll be ready to talk on the other bill.
Okay. Mr. Pouchard, are you going to testify on this, or are you here for questions? Likewise, Mr. O'Brien, do you both want to come up?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Dennis Pouchard. I'm with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. With me is Mark O'Brien. Mark is our Chief Contracts Officer and is the department's expert on the topic of force account. And I think we've got Mark's going to take the lead in saying a few things, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark O'Brien, Department of Transportation, Public Facilities. The department is opposed to Senate Bill 83. The effect of this bill would be to prohibit the department and any agency that it might transfer projects to from working on construction projects, force account, even if they were in the best interest of the state, those projects over $250,000. When the department uses its employees or the employees of a local public agency to perform the work, it's generally referred to as force account. Most of the projects the department considers for force account construction are federally funded. In addition to statutory requirements that the decision be in the best interest of the state, the federal provisions also require that it be cost effective. An example of the type of project that typically meets both of these tests are the small community roads and boardwalk projects that are accomplished in conjunction with other community projects. When DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, Village Safe Water, Bureau of Indian Affairs, or the Indian Health Service is in a community building existing infrastructure, the department has in its program a boardwalk or a road that is part of this infrastructure, it's often in the state's best interest and cost effective to transfer that project to Village Safe Water, BIA, Indian Health Service, the entity that is working in that community at the time, to be administered with their project. If the department is prohibited from approving force account projects in excess of $250,000, the likely result will be an increase in construction costs on those projects. This additional burden on the department's construction program will then reduce the total number of projects that can be funded in the program. Force account is one tool available to the department to accomplish construction projects and is used on a very limited basis. Over the last 3 years, the approved force account project accounted less than 3% of the department's annual capital budget. That's the conclusion of my prepared statement. I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have on the force account.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Members of the committee, you have questions? Senator Olson?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The question I have, you just made your comment that only 3% of the department's annual capital budget is involved with force accounts. We seem to have heard testimony to the contrary today. Do you have any comment that in numbers of less than 50% might be involved? Can you explain that?
Sure. The confusion lies in those portions of the capital budget that are expended other than for the construction contract itself. And that would include the design of the project, construction administration. Those fees are not included in the actual construction that is usually typically handed over to a contractor. So the comment, I believe, is by Mr. Johansson out of Fairbanks, was that it wasn't fair to say that that was 3 or 4%. The number varies depending on whether you're talking about a three-year average or the last one. But if you use 4%, that the 4% was not that of those funds turned over to contractors for construction projects. And that's an accurate statement because, and actually the department, the information we've provided to folks that have requested indicate that that is the percentage of the total program that the department has, not of those monies going to construction contractors.
Senator Olson.
The follow-up question I have for that, I'm assuming with these architects and engineering firms that are there, they all come from Anchorage or Fairbanks or someplace like that. Are there any of these firms that are outside the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, no, not generally. The design consultants utilized for these projects are primarily within the state.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Ward?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I can understand this a little better. The forced accounting, they don't pay Bacon Davis wages, is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, that's correct, Senator Ward.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, so then my understanding is that, like, this road to the airport, so if we didn't pay, so the administration is saying not to pay Bacon Davis in order to get more work done, so if we just didn't pay Bacon Davis all over the state, we'd be able to get a lot more work done? Is that what the administration's heading at? How do you decide? Well, you know, because my airports, the road to my airport in North Kenai, it the road could really be fixed on it, but they have to pay a higher wage there to get that one fixed. And maybe I'm not understanding. Why are you doing it one place and not encouraging it everywhere?
Through the chair, Senator Ward, the reason is that the statutory requirements for the payment of Davis-Bacon apply only to contractors and subcontractors. So the projects that we're doing out there on a force account basis are being done by local communities. So those wages are governed by that community and those and the rates that they establish, not by the Davis-Bacon law.
So, but the administration is funding that, correct?
Senator Ward, yes, that's correct.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, so I understand, so by them funding this, they're able to get more work accomplished, is that correct?
Senator Ward, in a lot of cases, the communities are able to benefit from by extending the money that they're given because of the wage rates they're paying. It goes farther. They get more money for their projects, and they do realize those savings, yes.
So with that in mind, Mr. Chairman, is that something the administration is supporting throughout the state? This cost savings and getting more work done.
When the administration is approached on a project-by-project basis with a request for a local agency to conduct the work, the project that we have, we consider those on a case-by-case basis. And they have to meet the two tests that I originally testified to. They have to be in the state's best interest, and they have to be cost-effective.
Well, Mr. Chairman, doesn't that fit all the projects that are in the state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ward, I'll try to answer the question from a slightly different perspective. I think that if you could use the same logic for just about any project, But there's also other criteria that the department tries to take a look at. We certainly try to take a look and make sure that there is the wherewithal to handle a project of the size and the magnitude that is being requested. I think you'll find that if you look at the list, most of the projects that were done by an agency other than the department, because the department does do some force account work itself, as is the case with St. Mary's that was brought up earlier, most of those were done in cooperation with another agency where the other agency took over the project, like DEC or the Bureau of Indian Affairs or some other agency. I don't think we just will indiscriminately hand over a project to anybody who wants to do one just because it's going to save money. I think that we also want to ensure that the project is completed in a manner that is in the state's best interest, too.
Thank you, Mr. Prichard. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. O'Brien, the reason we're here today is, someone said this morning, because St. Mary's broke the camel's back. So I'm wrestling with the number 250, and what the bill says, that if it's more than 250, then thou shalt not do force account. But let's for the moment say, I'm looking for a number, my number is 3 million, because that's what brought us here. I think there's a need for force accounting, but I also think there's a need for you to have some flexibility in the field. But I also think that there's a duty to private industry to allow them to bid on projects. So I'm sort of searching for a number that's higher than 250, but lower than 3 million. And so then you say, well, what is that number? And I say, I don't know. But I would think that, let's just say we'd make this a half a million. Then what that would say to me is that for every project you have to bid over a half a million, you have to put it out so people see it and they bid on it. And then eventually I would think that if it's not worth the moat cost to get out and do that job, pretty soon you'd find out that most jobs in a certain range aren't going to have responsive bidders, and therefore those then would become your force account. Become your force account number. So, what I'm saying is, I'm looking for a number other than 250 because I think that's too low. And I know in the Transportation Committee we tried to pin you down to a number, and I know for the last 2 months you've been thinking of that number to share with us. So I'll share a number with you unless you talk me out of it. But for now, I'd like you to think about that. You don't have to answer it, but I'm going to talk a little bit to the sponsor about it. And if I could, one other question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wilkin.
So I think when I read this, I want to make sure, and I'll ask the sponsor, if you put out a project for 251 and nobody bid on it, then you would be able to just go ahead and force account. That's implied in the bill. So you put out a $260,000 project, nobody bid on it, you'd go ahead and you'd become the contractor, you being the state. That's the way I read it now. Is that the way you would read it? Think about that, too.
Yeah.
I have a trick question.
Not sure.
Mr.
Chairman, Senator Wilkin, I'll take another look at the bill and see if I can see it from your perspective, but my reading of it to date has been to assume that projects over 250, whether it's 251 or 260, we're required to bid those out. And so I don't know that we could just turn around and do it by force account if there's no bidder. I mean, that might be something we would need to discuss. I think we probably ought to talk to Department of Law and see what their take on this is, too.
Senator Hoffman?
Well, I think it's less than that. I think any project over 100,000, less than 100,000 or over 100,000 has to go to bid. The second paragraph, you have to have the best interests of the state as well as construction costs of less than 250. So there's a category here. Your hands are even tied further in that any projects of $100,000 and more have to go to bid. You have to have the best interest findings before you can proceed on your 250. So I think you're mistaken.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that is existing provision of law. Right. If it's over 100,000, we have to do a best interest determination. So that really wouldn't change that, but anything over 250, our hands would be tied, and we wouldn't even be able to do a best interest determination. We would have to bid that project. This is my reading of the bill.
Take a brief at ease.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Mr. Member.
Mr. Member?
Yeah.
Come on.
We'll see.
We're back in order. What I wanted to do was just do a conceptual amendment to address what came up in the conversation between Senator Wilken. And I talked to the sponsor, and he has no objection to allowing the flexibility for the department to use force account in this bill, under this bill, when there isn't a responsive bidder. And we're going to give the drafters the flexibility to achieve that. And I would say the conceptual amendment would read something like, after the word less, which is underlined on line 10, to put, or the department, the department has not obtained a responsive bidder, again, we're going to have to work with drafting on this, then the department may perform the work, notwithstanding any other provisions of the law. And we'll work with the drafters to ensure that language is appropriate. Senator Hoffman?
I thought Senator Wilken said there was a technical amendment. He wanted to add a zero after the... so it would be less than $3 million.
We'll check the record on whether he offered that amendment or not. Does everyone understand what I'm trying to achieve with the technical amendment? Is there an objection? Hearing none, that technical amendment number one has passed, or that conceptual amendment number one has passed with the flexibility to... let the drafters achieve what we tried to achieve there.
Mr. Chairman, the
Senator,
just so you can tell the drafters, the typical words are responsive, responsible, bidder. And so just make, you might want to send that in as suggestions to them.
Thank you. Senator Lehman. Senator Osterman.
Yeah, just, and I've got one of these pieces of paper in my packet that says force account / public interest findings, and then it has the 98, 99, and 2000. And I'm assuming that you have over here two columns on the right-hand side. One of them is number one, number two. The combined total of number one and number two are the total of the projects. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Osterman, that's correct. We decided to break out the labor and other costs because the labor cost is really the difference. That's the amount that's really not going to the contracting community. The materials and you know, the procurements of materials to do the project is pretty much the same whether we contract it out or whether we do it as a force account project. And so that's why we broke it out. But you're correct in that the two columns added together equal the total amount for each project.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Osterman.
So when you were talking about the new figures in the bill of $250,000, so the combined total of each one of those would relate to the $250,000?
Correct.
As a comment, Mr. Chairman, I ran through these numbers real quick and counted them up, and in 98, 6 out of 11 projects would fall within over $500,000. 6 out of 11 in 99 would also fall over $500,000. 8 out of 18 in year 2000 would fall over $500,000 if what Senator Wilkins was kind of hinting to a few minutes ago when he was talking, either somewhere between over those numbers of getting above the, maybe the 250. And when you look at the rest of the figures or the rest of the projects that are there that don't fall in within the 500,000, you're talking about a $200,000 project, a $385,000 project, a $21,000 project, a $50,000 project, a $95,000 project. So, you know, when you get into these are smaller, you know, that would give us the small projects, basically, I think that we're really trying to say that we can go ahead and force account if we got into a situation. So I think that, it's kind of a weak reason to go ahead and move it up to $250,000, I suppose, but, or to $500,000. But I think that if we can get up to $500,000, some of the other projects that are in here, there's... Of the 3 years, I see 5 more projects that would fall under the $500,000. So I don't know. I have never dealt with force accounting projects with DOT. I've never had to deal with a force accounting project, but I have dealt with a number of of construction projects that have been done for schools and clinics and things like this in our communities. And having served 8 years on the borough assembly, we used to do that. We would get the state dollars and we would go out and force account some of these construction projects that we had in the villages. And every one of them that we did, we had at least 80% local hires that were working in the community to build these projects. And so while I don't have experience with DOT, I do have a lot of experience in dealing with force accounting and projects in villages, and they do work. And I'm not, you know, I totally don't have a bit of problem with the unions or the Davis-Bacon Acts or not. What I do have with, and I'll have to disagree with some of the people who have testified today, that when these projects go out for contract and the contractor goes in, they want to hire the local people. Well, there's a lot of times that's just not the reality of what happens out there. The local people don't get hired, and they do bring in their own people, even because part of it's the way that their unions are set up and the way that the contractors are set up. They have to bring in their own key people that they feel, and it turns out to be a lot more key people than you would expect. So, you know, the reality of it is the more work that you can put those villagers doing, the better off it is. I don't know, I'm not gonna vote against moving the bill out of committee or anything, but I just have a little bit of a problem based upon my past experience.
Senator Osterman, were you trying to get at a new number?
Yes. I'm throwing $500,000 out on the table, I guess, and trying to get some.
You want to offer that as an amendment?
Yeah, I'll offer it as an amendment.
Would you go ahead and move that amendment?
Move $500,000 on line 10, replace $250,000 by $500,000.
Discussion?
I would object. I'd like to hear from the sponsor.
There were. Thank you. Senator Wilkin, did you have a comment or question on that?
That's no objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's sort of the over-the-top-of-the-thumb number, but I think 250 is probably a little restrictive, but 500,000 is a little less restrictive, and I think Senator Osterman has brought up good points that this would capture a lot of, it would still make sure a lot of the projects get to the street. So that's what we're trying to do here.
I'm getting a nod from Senator Cowdery that maybe 500,000.